Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening and welcome, folks, to Rock Sport Radio. It's Tuesday night. I'm Maureen McGonigal and this is Let's Hear It for the Girls. Tonight we've got Sarah Young and she's the pathway coach for cross-country skiing for Snow Sport Scotland. Welcome to Let's Hear It for the Girls, Sarah.
Thank you.
Your work's really interesting and it's probably something people don't really know an awful lot about or have great insight into. So we're going to have a wee look closer in depth after we've done our roundup. And what I'm hoping is that you'll join us for this week's roundup.
I'd love to.
Lovely, thank you. So we're going to start with golf. It's a big year for women's golf in Scotland with the Solheim Cup. And the Aberdeen Standard Investment Ladies Open has just announced the introduction of two theme days for the weekend to add the fun to the Renaissance Club. And it's from the 8th to the 11th of August. So I think it's great that sports, big or small, are now trying to think of things that they can attract women into and then maybe give them a little bit of introduction into the sport. You know, there's a little hook there that's bringing them in. So this is going to happen prior to the Solheim Cup, and the tournament, which is co-sanctioned by the LPGA and the Ladies European Tour, makes its debut at the Renaissance Club just 3 weeks after the men and is set to feature the world-class talent, including defending champion and major winner Araya Jutanagan, as well as Jung Jung Lee, Siyong Rai, Georgia Hall, Charlie Howell, and Scotland's very own Team Europe Solheim Cup captain, Katrina Matthew.
You did a really good job of the pronunciation.
Oh,
there.
I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I forgot to practice them. So apologies to anyone out there if I got them all wrong, but, you know, at least I got my tongue around them. Ladies' Day will take place on Saturday the 10th of August and it's new for 2019. It gives all the women attending a chance not only to watch the golf, but take part in a golf clinic with the European Tour coach Gary Nicola, enjoy live music from former Westlife star Brian McFadden, an up-and-coming Scottish artist, Hugh Kelly. I don't think I know that name, Hugh Kelly.
I haven't come across that either. I'll have to go check it out after this.
The next line will be something quite a lot of us will fancy. Participants will also be able to enjoy cocktail-making masterclass sessions supported by Loch Lomond Distillery, relax with a complimentary neck and shoulder massage, courtesy of the McDonald's Marine Hotel, and witness a special Q&A in the public village hosted by TV personality and friend of mine, I'm delighted to say, Emma Dodds. So that sounds like really a kind of fun afternoon out. You know, you're sort of, you know, getting a group of pals together, you're going along, you're finding out a bit more about golf, but you don't feel under any pressure because there are other things going on as well.
Yeah.
So I say well done. I just wanted to give a wee shout out to Georgia Adderley at squash because she's just arrived in Malaysia prior to the World Squash Federation World Juniors, and her first match will be kicking off tomorrow. So good luck, Georgia. And we're on to football. And Sunday in Paisley, France were crowned the UEFA Women's Under-19s champion after a hard-fought victory over Germany. There was a crowd of 1,135 turned out to support the finals. I think that's pretty amazing.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. I saw two of the games that involved Scotland and both times the numbers were around the 1,100 mark, which is really, really good under-19s. But it's always a gamble you take when two countries are playing and they're hosted in a country.
Yeah, when the home nation isn't there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to think that, you know, just under 1,200 people came out to support them, I think that says a lot for the rise of interest in women's football in Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we see over at Street Soccer, they have just announced that their women's team will travel to Nagpur in India from the 23rd of September up until the 1st of October. And they will participate in the Friendship Tour with their partner Slum Soccer. Players and staff will visit various projects across Nagpur and will take part in exhibition matches in the community as well as volunteering at local projects. The team will also play against the Slum Soccer India Women's National Team. And the players themselves will be selected from the Street 45 Women's Programme and they'll take part in the development sessions and education programmes prior to the trip. And strangely enough, you know, the Scottish Women's Sport Conference, which is on the 21st of August in Edinburgh, we are going to hear from Sarah about the Street 45 Women's Programme. So it'd be quite interesting knowing that they're going off in September, hear a little bit more about the good work they're doing in Scotland.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. Athletics, and it was the England Athletics Senior and CAU Championships, and they were held in Manchester over the weekend, and it was a great success for the Scottish team. Our para-athletes led the way with two world records in race running for Kayla Hagel and Gavin Drysdale, as well as a victory for ambulance runner Amy Carr. In total, we made it 7 gold medals, 3 silver and 5 bronze in Manchester, including Rachel Hunter and Emma Nuttall, who landed silvers in the hammer and high jump, respectively. Rachel's SB of 64.34 took her to third in the British rankings. So I think, something to celebrate again. And every week we come in, there's always good news happening about athletics. It seems to just be getting it right at this moment in time, whether it's in terms of their policies and their equity policies, whether it's in terms of their athletes. They just seem to be getting it right. Mark Monroe, who is the CEO, also spoke this weekend about female coaches, and he said it's very pleasing to see more female coaches breaking through with athletics at the top end. Scotland has always had good female coaches, but for whatever the reasons, in the past few have been working at international level, with the likes of Liz McColgan, of course, being the exception, who I believe still works with her daughter. We're now witnessing some excellent coaching from athletes and results to back this up. We have to make sure opportunities are there for coaches to grow and progress in order to develop the sport in Scotland. How important do you think that is in terms of a sport for young girls to be able to see this pathway, whether it's going to be through participation
or through
some
coaching.
Sort of leadership? Yeah. How do you think?
So for me, I've obviously just started as a coach, and I actually didn't really consider coaching as a career path for me. So I think the visibility of having female coaches is going to be really important for making it an option for young girls going forward. I think obviously there's a lot in the literature that says that having those female role models, having strong female role models, so having them in leadership positions is really, really important for keeping girls in sport and keeping them engaged. So it's very, very positive.
And I think it's quite refreshing. You've got a male CEO understanding, you know, the requirements. And I think that's good. And also to come out and verbalise that to the wider
community. Yeah, be so supportive of it. Yeah, that's really nice.
And I think it does, as you say, you obviously didn't see any particular role models in your own sport. So it takes you till you get a bit older to think, well, I can do that. And is it a bit more difficult?
There were role models. Like, I have had role models. It didn't strike me as something, you know, if I didn't want to be a PE teacher, it didn't strike me that sport was a career for me.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem with women in sport, because men can always see a career path.
Yeah.
But women don't seem to have that same.
And also, like, the idea that, like, performance coaching especially is so elite. And, you know, there's actually so few roles in high-end sport. And so it seems sort of almost like a closed book, I think.
Yes. And there's so many people going for the one position, it does make it difficult. Yeah, I know. I understand that. But talking about elite, we're going on to the Olympics now. And I just thought this was interesting because it's 1 year to go before the start of the Olympic Games in Tokyo 2020. And the organising committee has unveiled the design of the medals that will be awarded at the Games next summer. The winning designs were selected after a nationwide competition open to both professional designers and design students. And the sports fans across Japan had a particularly close connection to the medals thanks to the Tokyo 2020 Medal Project, a landmark recycling initiative which ensured that each one of the medals had been moulded entirely from metal extracted from recycled commute. Let me start again, folks. Extracted from recycled consumer electronics over the past 2 years. So, in fact, signature yellow donation boxes were placed in post offices and street corners all over the country, and the partner company enabled the public to donate their used phones at 2,400 stores nationwide. What do you think of that? I mean, this is something that's kind of right up your street in terms of your previous role.
Yeah.
So tell me what you think about it.
Well, I think it's lovely. I think for a way, in terms of getting a nation actually engaged in what they're doing, because often I think the Olympics is actually quite there's a lot of negativity about it. So like having another element to get people involved is really amazing. And also, yeah, in environmental stuff is what I studied, and I like the idea. How effective it
yeah,
has
how much
been.
Of a difference yeah. would it make? Yeah.
But maybe in terms of it exposed recycling, got people thinking about it, got people yeah. recycling electronics as well, because electronics is a kind of a big issue. There's a whole like waste stream associated with it.
And I would assume over in Tokyo, there would be a lot.
Yeah, I mean, they're super advanced.
Just
a total stereotype.
Oh, you've called me out on that one, haven't you?
No, but I agree with you.
Yeah, that's fine. We can sit comfortable for the rest of the show then. But, sort of being leaders in that type of market,
they're yeah, exactly.
going to be people that, you know, change things often. And I think it's great, obviously, that they're going to do that. But I do wonder if the reasons are altruistic, or whether they're just in terms of you know getting this box ticked, because you know we think of the Olympics and what it must do to the environment, all these people getting on their planes to come over, etc. But I suppose we were talking earlier, we were saying that any step's a good step.
Yeah, I mean that's what you said about the golf, and it's the kind. It's,
are you telling me I'm repeating myself?
No, I am repeating myself. I'm saying that it's maybe the same principle
yes.
in terms of it. Takes the, you know, it encourages good behaviours.
Yeah, and you've got to start some way, haven't you?
Yeah.
So yes, it'd be interesting to see if they follow that up with anything else that can be looked at being environmentally friendly, and yeah. will be an interesting
one. Is there requirements around environmental specifications for the Olympics? Because I feel like there's been a lot of stuff done at previous events, like in London, there was quite a lot done with sort of like biodiversity around. The Olympic Park and stuff. So I think it might actually be
part of
the Olympic.
When you bid to host it, that's maybe something that the committee looks upon much more
favorably.
Yeah, that would be interesting to find out. But I mean, it won't be that long until we're actually in 2020 and
no.
the Olympics are on top of us. So yeah, I think it's going to rack up in terms of sports between now and then. So it's going to be an interesting time for us all, which is fabulous. I'm going to go into cycling, which, again, it's the Women's Tour of Scotland. It's just now over a week away. I think it starts on the 10th of August. So if you didn't know already, 16 of the best women's cycling teams from around the world will battle it out over 350 kilometres of Scottish roads. The Scotland team is set and ready to roll as part of a 16-team peloton comprising of some of the leading international teams in women's cycling. Our team is Katie Archibald, Nia Evans, Anna Shackley, Jenny Hall, Jennifer George and Sophie Lankford. I mean, this is just so exciting. I've been involved in this in as much as I've been aware of it from the start.
Right.
And it seemed like a long time coming, and now it's here. So it starts in Dundee next Friday morning and finishes later that afternoon in Dunfermline. Stage two starts in Glasgow, and Glasgow Life will also be launching their fantastic Women's on Wheels, that is not easy to say, initiative that morning. The riders will then make their way to Perth before the final stage in Edinburgh on the Sunday. So I'm going along to the Glasgow stage. We're invited along to watch that. And I think it's amazing. I mean, the amount of stuff that has to be done to enable this to happen, the road closures, etc., etc. Fingers crossed for a decent day for it, because I do remember we had lovely weather during the Commonwealth Games. I don't know if you remember that in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And then came the cycling and the heavens opened and it just didn't stop and it was terrible. So it should be an amazing event. So do get out, watch the race if you can. If you haven't had a go at cycling yourself, then Gail Porter will be fronting a ride for the public in Holyrood Park after the start of Stage 3 in Edinburgh. So pop along with your bike, meet Gail and enjoy the day out. And if you want to find out any more, just head to the Women's Tour of Scotland.com website. Follow them on Twitter or through Instagram, and it's Women's Tour Scotland handle. Were you telling me earlier that you were involved in something like this before?
So I volunteered at the 2012 Olympics in London, and so I was one of the course marshals for the road cycling there, and then I also volunteered for the practice race in Glasgow. Right. So the year before the Commonwealth Games.
Uh-huh.
So I was out on the road outside Glasgow Green.
Like, I do remember, now I can't think when it was, but I was in Glasgow Green for one of the, you know, the hosts of different bits and pieces surrounding sport, and there was a road race on, but there was also a train strike at the same time, and people, and the place just ground to a halt for that afternoon. So fingers crossed it all goes according to plan, and good luck to all the cyclists. And now we're on to rowing. The Scotland rowing team made history on home waters at the 2019 Home International Regatta on Saturday. They won 3 out of 4 of the team trophies for the first time in the history of this prestigious annual competition between Scotland, England, Ireland and Wales. Scotland's senior women have won the Dame Catherine Granger Quake for the 3rd year running and were in unstoppable form, winning 7 of the 9 boat classes, including the women's 8 in the penultimate race of the day. And then on to gymnastics, and I think this is wonderful. It was a great weekend for Scottish gymnastics at the British Championships. Congratulations for the newly crowned 12-18 WG British champions Scarlett, Ellie and Rebecca from Acrobay 06, and also success in the 11-16 for Olivia, Erin and Kalia, and they're also from Acrobay 06. And there was a win at 12-18 for Mia and Brennan from East Kilbride, and at 13-19 for Chiara, Lucy and Simona from Kilmarnock. Finally, Louise Christie from Beacon, Rhythmic GC won a bronze medal in the senior club's final. So that's been a great weekend for the gymnastics there. And finally, we're on to swimming, and it was gold for Glasgow's Katie Shanahan in the new European Youth Olympic record in Baku. Katie kick-started Team GB's medal haul at the Baku 2019 European Youth Olympic Festival with a 400-metre individual medley gold on the second day of competition in Azerbaijan. The 15-year-old Glaswegian dominated the final from start to finish, ending with a time of 4.43.92. Over 6.5 seconds clear of the field and a new European Youth Olympic record.
That's just amazing.
Yes.
That is a lot of empty pool, like, between her and the next person.
And a young age. So great hope for the future. She eased her way into the final of the 200-metre backstroke also in 2.1403, winning her semi-final and qualifying second fastest for the final. So she said, "I'm just so happy to have won and get that first medal for the team," and she also won the European Junior Bronze in the same event early in that month. You were kind of involved in swimming when you were younger.
Yeah, it was probably my main sport till I was about 17. Yeah, it's really, really fun sport. Yeah,
not hard work, not difficult, but fun. Why so much fun? Tell me.
Oh God, that's a difficult question.
Is it the people? I mean, or is it?
So our club was quite a young club when I started. I was one of the first group of kids to go through it. So it wasn't as serious. Like, a lot of people are getting up really, really early to get pool time.
Well, that was my understanding, that, you know, for most swimming.
Yeah. But for us, we had pool time on Monday evenings after school, Wednesday after school, Friday evening. So it was a little more relaxed. I swam in the mornings because I loved it, and I went by myself. Sometimes with friends, sometimes with my dad. But yeah, it was just a really nice group to be part of.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're going to hear a little bit more. We're going to hear a lot more from you after the break. So stay around, stay with us. We'll just have a short ad break. So as we say, put the kettle on, get a cuppa, grab a digestive or a hobnob. What is your favourite?
Oh, I'm partial to both of those.
You're not fussy. And we'll be back shortly to find out a little bit more about Sarah Young.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.
So welcome back to tonight's Let's Hear It for the Girls, and to our guest, Sarah Young, who is the pathway coach for cross-country skiing, and that's with Snow Sport Scotland. So just before we get right into our chat, let me take a little minute to remind you all out there, if that you want to have your sport featured on our roundup. If you want to come in and chat to me and try and get me to speak properly, drop me a line through Twitter at RocksportDAB, through the Facebook Rocksport Radio, and just mention Let's Hear It for the Girls, because we would love to have you here and would love to feature your sport, your events, your results, whatever. This is the place where you can have your say. So, Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, first of all, I've got to say, delighted that you're here because you've had a bit of a journey.
Tell
us a wee bit about what happened.
Yeah, well, I just had a bit of a nightmare getting back from holiday.
That'll serve you right for going on holiday, Sarah. That's all I can say.
Exactly, exactly. You can't complain. We had a flight postponed overnight. I was supposed to get back at about 12 o'clock on Sunday and didn't get back until 5 o'clock last night.
Oh dear, oh dear. So if you fall asleep, I'll just stick a pin in you?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just start off as always, finding out a little bit more about you. And I think you had a really interesting childhood. It sounds actually quite idyllic. You were born in Aberdeen. You moved to Canada for a short spell at a very early age. Give us a little feel for your life as a young girl.
Sure. So I grew up in Huntly in Aberdeenshire. So it's on the train line between Aberdeen and Inverness.
I was going to say, is that where Hannah Miley comes from?
She's from Inverurie. So she's like the train stop down.
I'm just wondering, you know, talking about the swimming beforehand, I'm thinking, is there something in the water up there? Literally. So Huntly, that sounds lovely.
It's a nice place. It's really, really quiet. There isn't a whole lot to do there. I lived there all the way up until I went off to university, but we did spend 6 months in Whistler in Canada when I was 7 years old. So my mum was a GP. She's retired now. She's loving it. She took a sabbatical. She just took 6 months off. Took the family to Canada. And my brother went, he was not in school yet, so he was just in play school. Mm-hmm. I went to school.
I was going to ask you that, you know, for the 6 months, did you just have a 6 months sort of tuning around, or 6 months it was just like another country, but there still had to be daily school? Yeah?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, I went to school there. So I can't even remember, I think it was like grade three or something like that. And then at the weekends we were at the ski school there, so we spent the weekends just up on the mountain skiing.
What were you then, seven?
Yeah.
It's a perfect age really to get involved in that type of sport, is it not?
Oh, like it was phenomenal. Like I improved a load during that time. And I ended up just being in a group with an instructor. So I had, like, it was just me and one instructor. So I had private tuition mm-hmm. most weekends. Just fluke.
Uh-huh.
Just I was the only person at that development.
And that was your go-to at the weekends?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but that was downhill skiing. So we didn't actually do that much cross-country skiing, which is what I'm involved in now during uh-huh. that time period. But yeah.
Yeah. But you were staying in a beautiful part of Canada. I mean, just slightly from Vancouver?
Yeah. So Whistler is like 3 hours from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the 2010 Olympics, so the 2010 Olympics were based in Vancouver and in Whistler. It's a phenomenal resort. It's got a lot of skiing. I'm utterly biased. I spent a lot of time there.
I was going to say, have you been back often?
Yeah, we used to go back quite a lot.
Uh-huh.
Because my grandfather was born in Vancouver, and his family had a house there. And when his great aunt died, he kept the property and rented it out. And my mum and my aunt actually bought a place in Whistler.
Mm-hmm.
So that we've got a place to
perfect,
go.
Perfect, isn't it? A place to hide away. But, you know, from what I can gather, you all seem like a really physically active family.
Yes.
But I believe your brother Andrew is an Olympian.
Yeah. So
wow.
Andrew,
big shout out to Andrew. Yeah. This is your younger brother.
Yeah,
only
that's
the two
important.
Of you.
That's yes. important. My younger brother Andrew is a cross-country ski Olympian. Yeah, he's been to 3 Olympics now.
Wow. He must have been pretty young when he started then. What age did he do his first Olympics?
He turned 18 while he was there.
Uh-huh.
So he was like one of the youngest competitors at the Games.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
he went to Vancouver, it was his first one.
Oh, that was quite handy.
Yeah.
He wouldn't feel so lonely.
Uh-huh. No, and my aunt's really into volunteering at sports events. So she volunteered at Vancouver was her first Olympics that she helped at. So she actually stayed out at the house the entire time.
Oh, brilliant.
And worked through the Olympics. Uh-huh. So.
And how did you do? How has it been getting on?
Yeah, that was really loud, sorry. Yeah, his best ever result is he's had a third at World Cup level. So he podiumed in his event is sprinting, so he does these short head-to-head races.
Yeah. Just throws himself down.
Oh, well, so it's around a course, so there are downhills, but there's a lot of climbing as well.
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago, I think, now. And he had this insane season where he was performing really, really well, like getting his best ever results. He got his medal, and then the next weekend he got taken out by a line across the track. So there's all these blow-up kind of advertising banners, and the guy rope was hanging down, and he went in the inside corner. He's a tall guy, my brother, as well. He's 6'4", and he got his arm caught in this rope.
Gosh, that could have been really
it was a race that actually was fortunate enough to be at to watch, and he went down pretty hard.
It's only a sister could laugh at something like that, you know.
I can laugh now. It was pretty devastating at the time.
He's been very fortunate. I mean, did he suffer any problems from it?
He was absolutely fine. It was just he got put out of the race. He was like in the form of his life.
Oh.
So that has been really disappointing.
Well, that's very sad, isn't it? But I mean, as children, you obviously had a great time. You tell me about all the things that you got up to. Give us a little feeling for what you got up to as children in Huntly when you were playing.
Yeah, it was great. We spent a lot of time outdoors. We had a lot of friends who like had pretty big gardens and things. We did a lot of like tree climbing and fort building and played like...
Sounds like a bit like Enid Blyton, doesn't
no,
it?
It does, doesn't it?
The famous five go to Huntly.
Yeah, just no dogs. We had like friends who were super adventurous, so we did I think they did read a lot of Enid Blyton. Could it be perfectly
maybe
honest.
Not too far from them, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So we did a lot of like woodcraft and stuff like that as well. But we also did a lot of sport, so we had a group of friends who I think it depended what the big championship was. So like when the tennis was on, we played tennis. When the cricket was on, we played cricket.
But that's only reinforcing the conversations we've had over the years. But in terms of it raising awareness, you know, when you bring something to the country or when you sit and watch it on television now, it raises awareness, but does it take you on the pathway to participate in that sport?
I mean... You just sparked a memory, which was when the Olympics were on. We used to do the Olympics, the athletic stuff, in our back garden. So I think if people have access to space to go and do it and they have the imagination, then it must encourage people to get involved.
Yeah.
And maybe do it their own way, which is like doing high jump onto beanbags.
I'm just so delighted they don't have a fort building championship because I think you would still be into that.
I definitely would, yeah.
So not only at home were you active, but also on your holidays you did walking, cycling, you name it. Give us some of your memories for the best times of that, because again, you know, I'm like walking, and I did cycle when I was in Spain 6 years ago. Fell off the bike and thought, oh no. Well, yes, because everyone's so good there as well. You were just so embarrassed because everyone else wanted to rush to help you because they don't often see people falling off their bikes. But, you know, you had some really good holidays. Your parents were really active and outdoorsy. Give us a little feeling for this kind of family life and what you did during your holidays.
Yeah, so my parents had always come up with something that they wanted to go and do. So we did... We did a couple of like cycle holidays where we'd take everything on the bike and just stay at B&Bs and stuff, different place each night. So we did the Hebrides. We cycled around Lewis and Harris, and that was amazing. We had fantastic
fabulous,
weather.
Isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. And we went to a beach every single day.
So and you couldn't get nicer beaches, could you?
I mean, they're gorgeous. They
beautiful,
are
beautiful, but the water never ever gets warm.
No.
It's always freezing.
But it's beautiful. Like, the colours are just stunning. Yes. So that was a good one. We cycled around Snowdonia in Wales as well. We cycled across, I think it's called the C2C. It's a, one of the Sustrans routes in, okay. in North England. But that one, it absolutely peed it down with rain. And I was about 16.
Oh.
And it's one of the family-like stories is that I had a strop and I told my parents in no uncertain terms if my underwear was not dry in the morning. I was 16. I could look after myself. I was catching a train home.
Your point there, Sarah. I mean, they really can. Nothing worse than putting on wet underwear in the morning. Goodness sake.
So they sound really good, but they didn't always do.
Well, it is, isn't it? It's the romantic overview of the whole thing. But I mean, you did, you went to the Dolomites in Italy and the yeah. Pyrenees in France, and you did a lot of canoeing. I mean, it does sound great. And I think what sounds so good about it is you were doing it as a family.
Yeah.
I think that's a really nice thing.
I think I'm in a really lucky position where a lot of the sports I've been introduced to, I've been introduced by my family.
Yeah, particularly skiing.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge part of your family, isn't it?
Yeah, it
is. Your parents are still involved in the Nordic Ski Club in Huntley.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, and I think not only is it part of their sport and their sort of physical and mental health well-being, but it's their social side too.
Yeah.
So is it a big social scene up in Huntley? Is there a lot of people skiing in Huntley?
It was. Uh-huh. So the Huntley Nordic and Outdoor Centre was the only like purpose-built cross-country ski centre in Scotland. And it's got the only purpose-built artificial track. It has it's a fantastic facility. It has a really good club there, which... Obviously, again, I'm quite biased because that's the club system. That's the pathway that I went through.
You're absolutely allowed to be biased. It is quite all right.
But yeah, they do a lot of fun stuff. They have like junior program. They were doing like after school stuff. They have a club evening and they run races.
And it's a shame you're now seeing it's maybe not just as well used. Or did you see that?
I think they could do with some more new members.
Yeah.
They're still doing an awful lot.
There's so much choice nowadays that sports have got to try hard to get members in. You know, they've got to find this hook to get them in and to keep them there.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more of a competition, I would think, in terms of people's time.
Yes.
Mm. But you weren't all outdoorsy. No, and I'm fascinated to hear that you also liked reading, piano and painting.
Yep.
But reading, and particularly period dramas, kind of sparked something in you. And I think this is, you know, this is a whole amalgam of what makes you who you are.
Yeah, So, period dramas, they often talk about accomplished women.
yes, check yeah. that one in the dictionary.
Yeah, well, there's, like... people who they sort of like set up admire people with like multiple skills and you know who can play the piano and so maybe the skills that they consider accomplished are maybe like a little sexist or but
I don't know. I mean, do you think of yourself as an accomplished woman now?
No,
you don't. I think you sound pretty accomplished to me. Yeah.
I guess a little bit of it is sort of like more like growth mindset and yes. sort of like I wanted to be good at everything and not just one thing.
Maybe that's something that sometimes isn't possible, but you know what the whole key is here, that you don't have to be good at it, but you have to at least try. And if you do your best, that's, you know, all we're looking for. So try everything. Don't say you don't like it if you haven't tried it.
I'm actually trying to redefine success at the moment as not being like necessarily winning, but as trying, the effort. If you try hard at something, then you're successful at it. It's not.
And we do hear a lot of athletes who have perhaps come back from injury who are not winning, but they've achieved a personal best. And for them, that is something that gives them that spur to go further. And I think the thing is also everyone's different. So your personal best, my personal best, someone else's personal best is different. But if you can achieve that, it does give you that sense of satisfaction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But we have to go to your first love, don't we? We have to really focus a bit more on skiing. And it was your main hobby.
Yes.
And, you know, at one point in your life, you were doing it lunchtimes and every single evening after school.
Sport in general or skiing?
Skiing.
So skiing really kicked off for me when I was 17.
17.
So I went to Canada for my last year of school. And that was when I started focusing on skiing full time.
Ah, but before that, you had tried so many different sports. In fact, at one point in your life, you were trying to fit in two sports per night.
Yes.
Talk about an accomplished woman. What did you do? Sort of swimming and hockey, and then volleyball. And what did you do when you did volleyball?
The volleyball, ski club? Ski club was after that, yeah.
And then you played football until you broke your wrist.
Yep.
And your first tournament as a goalie. You ran in the school inter-schools and the Scottish schools cross-country. And you swam for the school. So, I mean, how did you have time to study?
That's a good question. Uh-huh. I do wonder, looking back. We had a fantastic headmaster at my school when I was there, who has actually unfortunately just died. But he had a lot of time for the extracurricular stuff, and he really promoted the school for doing those things. And part of that was he would say you were present, but not in school, so you didn't have, if you were doing something for the school. So there was one year where I actually, between the week before Christmas and the Easter holidays, I did not do a full week at school.
But you were present.
Yes. What the register, you know, said I was, my attendance was 99%, but I hadn't done a full week at school.
But I think that he's obviously quite a man before his time, because we now know the benefits of being involved in sport and how it does help you with your academic studies, although I'm not sure if you know, for like 1% of the time it's finding the balance. But, you know, to be fair, Sarah, you've come out the other side a pretty accomplished woman. But let's go back to skiing. So 17, you're back in Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did my last year of school there and skied for like the local ski club there. Which was great because I don't know if I mentioned before, but my dad was my coach, and he actually ended up being the head coach for Great Britain.
Oh, no, you just didn't mention that at all.
just
it's all about Sarah so far, isn't it? Poor dad, head coach for Great Britain, doesn't get a look in, but I'll just casually mention it. Wow, now we know why. You know, that's great to have that.
So it was really important for me, the time in Canada, because I had a different coach. And I worked with someone different for the year, and then he also did my training plan when I came back and started university, so for the first semester or two while I was at university, I was working with someone else.
Is it difficult to have your father as your coach?
I loved it.
Did you? Yeah.
Personally. I think for him it was really difficult balancing. He always said he had a coach hat and a dad's hat.
Yeah, I could understand that.
But yeah, for me, like, I trust him and I understand like where he's coming from.
Uh-huh.
And that's an important part of what you need.
Wow.
From a coach.
So you spent a year when you were 17?
Yep.
I mean, did you have ambitions as trying to take skiing to the next level? You know, a bit like your brother. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that time, so that was the year I was in Canada, was actually the year that I qualified for the European Youth Olympics.
Mm.
So the winter version of the event that the swimmers are at. There was a team of six of us who qualified to go to that. And that was the first time anyone had represented cross-country skiing for Britain there.
Wow.
And yeah, like at that time, there wasn't that many senior skiers. There wasn't really a defined pathway. So it was all very exciting and very new. Like everything we went to was a new competition. There was a group of us. There was six of us in my age group. And then my brother is kind of he went to the European Youth Olympics 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like in the age group below. And so he sort of caught up to us in another couple of years.
Yeah, because you also at the age of 12 you were at the British Nordic development squad. So, I mean, there has been this kind of thread of keeping you involved in that particular sport for a lot of your life.
Yeah, that was... So we went through the club pathway, and then when I was 12, I was at a certain standard that they actually put me forward for the British... It's called the British Nordic Development Squad, we call it BNDS for short. So they arranged training and race events for kids between 12 and 18. In the UK, abroad, like take them to the British Champs, which are in Germany. I did that. And it was a great experience. It was fantastic to be exposed to have older friends, to have the opportunity to travel independently, to go to other countries, like practice languages.
Of course, these are the benefits that you get. But I'm looking here, I mean, you've had a good bit of success. Your European Youth Olympics Festival, 2 times World Junior Championships, 2 times World Under 23s, 3 times World Championships, as well as the World University Games, while studying for a master's degree in ecological economics.
Yeah, don't ask me to explain what that is.
Well, tell you what, let's explain what you're currently doing. You're now working with Snow Sport Scotland. You're based in Edinburgh. Yeah. You moved down just for the job?
No, so I moved to Edinburgh in 2013 for my master's, actually.
Uh-huh.
And yes, I've been there since.
So that's a few years. And you've been in this role for, 5 months?
Yeah, so I started in February.
Uh-huh.
Yep, so that would make 5 months.
Silently counting in ahead.
Yeah.
And is this a new role that they've created, or...?
Yeah, this is a brand new. There's no one who's been a pathway coach for cross-country in Snow Sport Scotland before. And actually, my colleague who's the performance coach, Alex Standen, he's the first person who's been hired as a national cross-country coach.
And your particular role, is it to encourage more people to get involved in the cross-country skiing? Yes?
Yeah, I have two sort of elements to my role, and 50% of it is about participation and getting more people exposure to the sport, getting people involved, getting people outside in the winter, active, enjoying themselves on skis. And then the other element is to look after the performance, the pathway to performance. So that's sort of facilitating the move from club level into a national squad.
How big are the numbers, say, particularly in cross-country skiing? Have you any idea what they are?
No, off the top of my head.
From someone who sits outside it, you're thinking, well, it's not one of the easiest sports to get involved with because, A, you either need the weather or you need an indoor facility. So you can't rely on the weather. How many indoor facilities are there? I mean, where is the predominance of the indoor facilities? Or do you need it? You're going to tell me you don't. I've got that look. You've got that look in your face. Think you're talking rubbish again, Maureen.
So the really cool thing about cross-country skiing is that it doesn't have to just be on snow, because we've got roller skis, which are these summer equivalents.
Yeah.
And they go on tarmac, so they can go anywhere. So we've actually done school sessions where we take the roller skis into the school and they have a shot on them in the playground. So in terms of accessibility for snow sport, cross-country skiing can really be brought to the people.
This is a competitive edge coming out even within the work. We can do more with the cross-country skiing than you can with any other kind. But yeah, because I do remember now, I do recall that you showed me. The skis, which they clip onto the normal boots, which gives you the opportunity. Again, I think it's good because if you're introducing someone into it, it kind of takes away the fear factor, because you can sell it as being like rollerblades, roller boots, till you get them to a certain level.
Uh-huh. And at the same time, it is almost a sport in itself, as roller skiing. Like, if you enjoy roller skiing, then you don't necessarily have to go and find the snow, but I recommend it. Snow skiing is amazing.
Well, I think it's the sense of freedom, isn't it? So I also believe that you've got a particular new project that you're wanting to bring to the attention of the Scottish public for the cross-country skiing?
Well, it's for snow sport in general.
And it's for females?
Yes.
So let's have a little chat around this, because this sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so we are looking into doing a female participation program. So Snow Sport Scotland is strategically looking to encourage female participation. And we've been working on a proposal now for the last couple of months into how we can deliver a program that looks at retaining and encouraging teenage participation, and also highlighting our fantastic role models that we have, the women who are currently involved in snow sports, who love it and are encouraging other people to do it.
What kind of areas are you taking this new project to?
So for the first year, we're looking at doing Edinburgh, Glasgow and Aberdeen, but with the hope that we can expand it elsewhere. Those are our key population areas and where most of our members are based at the moment.
And what does it entail? I mean, what's going to happen there? Is it just a program in terms of bringing them out and skiing? Are you adding some, you know, we're talking earlier on about the golf.
Yeah.
Is there any added extras, anything sort of like quirky that we can see that's going to encourage the girls to get involved?
Well, we're hopeful that it's going to be a really fun program. It's going to be based around friendship and working together, that there'll be some educational elements as well as just the sport, and more fun girl orientated. So a lot of the literature says that traditional sessions don't necessarily attract girls. So we're going to look at making it much more girl focused, with maybe more creative stuff, and maybe more music and dancing and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think so tell me, if someone wanted to get involved, how would they do that?
Well, at the moment, it would just be keeping their eyes peeled. We've got a website, we've also got a Facebook page, and we will be putting stuff out.
So we being Snow Sports Scotland?
Yes, yeah. Snow Sports Scotland.
So let's give out the website and the Facebook page. If anyone wants to find out a bit more about this or any of the disciplines within skiing, this is where they should go to find it out. Okay.
So it's www.snowsportscotland.org. And also the Facebook is just Snow Sports Scotland.
And let me ask you one more question. Expensive. How do we get over the cost here? What happens there?
So again, cross-country skiing doesn't have to be that expensive. For the female participation program, we're probably looking at like £25, which it isn't a one-off thing, but it's going to be. Yeah. We're hoping for like a big event feel. But actually, we're running participation sessions. It's £12.50 for an adult and £6.50 for an under 18 or a student.
And it's not a lot to have a bit of fun, is it?
No.
Not a lot at all. So quickly tell me within the next 30 seconds.
Okay.
Where you would like to be in 5 years' time.
I'd like to be in Scotland with a good number of athletes, especially female athletes, pushing on to the performance pathway, and a lot of people enjoying skiing.
Sarah, thank you very much. Now, you've got a little story behind this song that you're going to have us play out.
Yes.
Let us know the song and what the story is.
Rock the Casbah by The Clash. And the reason I've chosen it is because it's from my European Youth Olympics Festival experience. In the closing ceremony, they kind of had us all out on an ice rink, and they played this song, and we did a conga.
Uh-huh.
Is that the right word?
Excellent. So a conga to Rock the Casbah. Thank you very much, Siri Young.
Thank you for having me.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and special guests on Rock Sport Radio.